Good morning and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. My name is Larry Kay from Chicago, and I will be the host for the presentation today. Today is Sunday, April 27th, 2025. The share ID numbers for Friday, April 25th, are the following for the 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting. That number is 22,378. That's 22378. For the 10 a.m. meeting on Friday, 22,379. That's 22379. This morning, A Vision for You presents Fear, an Evil and Corroding Thread. So our speaker, Renee, is going to share on the topic of fear from the big book and try to thread that together with her personal experience and insight. So looking forward to that. You know, anything you see around you, you know, look around, you see an elm tree, I don't know, a dog, or even the big book. You might have the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous right in front of you. And all those things acquire meaning because your mind gives it meaning. And in the 12-step programs, including OA, you'll often hear the saying, meeting makers make it. I'm not so sure, but I suppose maybe there's some truth in that. But perhaps it's more accurate to say meaning makers make it. And I think that's a bit more accurate. And there's no escaping that we live in a mind-made world for each of us. This is both the perhaps the glory and the peril of being human. And recovery is many things. But as much as anything, it's about having the courage to venture into deeper waters. I don't always like to swim in deeper waters, but that's what this is about to some extent. And we learn spiritual recovery is about a profound shift in one's personal reality. And that takes courage. And I'll tell you why it takes courage, because, you know, very few people are willing to swim in the deep end of the pool. You know, there's the fear of change and the fear of the unknown and the possibility of an uncertain future when you venture out there. And it keeps us from taking the actions necessary to experience this miraculous alteration of both mind and body. A spiritual awakening is indescribable, and it must be, by its very nature, experienced firsthand. Just as I was thinking, like sight is indescribable to someone who was born blind, and yet revelatory if that person gains sight. You know, within our literature in the AA 12 and 12, we're reminded on page 50 of the following with regard to our defects of character. It says, and I'll quote it here, by now, the newcomer has probably arrived at the following conclusions, that his character defects representing instincts gone astray have been the primary cause of his drinking, his eating in our case, and his failure in life. That unless he is now willing to work hard at the elimination of the worst of these defects, both sobriety and peace of mind will still elude him. You know, how interesting that our practical program of action, which is really found in the implementation of the steps, does not focus on the elimination of the core defects of our, I don't know, our diet, but rather the core defects of our character. The program does not ask us to seek alignment, let's say, with a dietitian, although you know, a nutritionist might be good, but we're not seeking alignment with the dietitian as a goal of recovery, but really a relationship with power, a power greater than ourselves. And of course, page 19 in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous says that we feel the elimination of our drinking is but a beginning. So certainly it goes without saying that, you know, we're going to have to put the alcohol foods down before we embark on this 12-step journey. And while working the 12 steps most assuredly calls for action, paradoxically, it's not so much a question of pushing or striving. Rather, it has much more to do with committing ourselves to an organic spiritual process It's like allowing ourselves to float along with the fast flowing current of a river. We don't need to swim so much. We just let the river carry us as we gently and purposefully cooperate. We do have to cooperate with the current. And at the same time, in a very symbiotic way, our own momentum will intensify the momentum of the spiritual process itself. The universe wants us to wake up and will happily guide us towards a spiritual awakening, provided, of course, we cooperate. And when we do this, our character defects, like fear, are maybe recalibrated. You know, the outcome is so much more than an individualized spiritual transformation. More of a maybe a collective transformation. We were born for wholeness. And one thing's for certain, to find peace, we have to go beyond fear. So joining us this morning to share on the topic of fear from the big book is Renee A. And Renee is a recovered compulsive overeater from Oklahoma. She's dedicated to our 12-step way of life, and she's committed to carrying a message of hope to our fellowship. So it's with much gratitude, much appreciation that we welcome Renee A. to the line this morning. Good morning, Renee.
Hey, Larry, and thanks so much for that great opening. Yep, that pretty well encapsulates everything that I'm going to talk about today. So, I am Renee A. I am a recovered compulsive overeater in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And this group has been such a help to me when I first came in from relapse several years ago. And yeah, this has become a safe haven for me and a place of recovery. So super grateful for that. Well, so let me first start out and say that if you've heard me share in the last 6 months or so, I'm sorry, it's going to be a complete repeat because for some reason, God just, you know, continues to ask me to tell this story whenever I get a chance. And so that's what I'm going to do. And the other thing that I hope that you can hear from my share, or what I hope that you take away from this, is it's all about God and not about me. This is God's story. He's the star of the show. He's the director of the play. All I did was, you know, stumble into the party 30 years ago trying to eat myself to death and with a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And God, you know, took it from there and has completely and totally turned my life upside down in a very, very good way. And so I hope that you leave here better acquainted with God's power, with his love for you, with his absolute ability to, you know, just to bring you out of whatever it is that you're in. So again, that's my hope. What I'm going to do first is just start with a really short qualification because I think, you know, it's a good idea for you guys to have some background. But here's the thing, you already know so much of the story because it, you know, it mirrors your own story. So I'm not going to do a long drunkalogue. Let's just say I'm a really hardcore binge eater and I tried to kill myself with food. That pretty well sums it up. I got into the program back in early 1995, about this time. So this is about 30 years for me. And I've been in and out of the program. Unfortunately, I've had some relapses in there. I have been a binge eater ever since I was a child. I don't have any memories that don't include binge eating. The other thing that you should know about me that's pertinent to this share today is that I have an anxiety disorder, and I have been anxious for as far back as I can remember. Now, here's the thing. If you don't have an anxiety disorder, you're not going to understand what that's like, probably. If you do have one, well, if you know, you know. Lots of research indicates that, you know, it probably is genetic or part of it is genetic. It doesn't really matter. The causes are not important. I have had an anxiety disorder ever since I can remember. And part of the reason I think I binge ate as a child is because I was just restless, irritable, uncomfortable in my own skin. And, you know, that's a rough thing when you're a kid and you don't know what to do about it. As a teenager, I got involved with drugs and alcohol, and that kind of put my eating disorder on the back burner for a while. But my eating disorder started back with a vengeance when I was about 20 years old. I'm going to spare you all of the details in between the ages of 20 and 36, because y'all know the story, okay? I binged, I dieted, I gained more weight, I binged, I dieted until I couldn't diet anymore, and then I just gained weight. So I showed up in this program back in 1995, and here are my stats. So I was 225 pounds, I wore a size 24, it was in terrible health. My blood pressure was through the roof. I spent all day in bed or in my recliner. I was so uncomfortable. I coated my body in baby powder just to keep the rolls of fat from chafing. I mean, I couldn't do anything. I couldn't even carry the groceries in out of the car without a break. So I was in bad, bad physical shape. Spiritually, I would have told you that I was an atheist because I thought that sounded cooler than I'm just really, really angry at God. I thought he didn't love me. I'd prayed and prayed to have this thing taken away, and he didn't seem to be responding to that. And I thought that he was kind of operating this club, and I wasn't allowed to be part of the club. And so I was just really, really angry. So I was not brought up in a spiritual tradition. When I was a child, I like to say I suffered from religious neglect. So I really had no relationship with God at all. And emotionally, oh my gosh, wow, what a nightmare. So, I would say I probably had a couple of settings. There was numb or there was angry. And so I was super abusive to my kids, to my husband. And on top of all of that, I had this anxiety disorder that was on overdrive. By that time, I was having debilitating panic attacks, sometimes as many as 6 or 7 a day. If you've ever experienced them, they're horrible. You think you're going to die. And they just come out of the blue for no apparent reason. I developed agoraphobia. I couldn't hardly leave my house. Super depressed, very, very suicidal. In fact, the summer before I got into the program, I came in through another program. I was seriously suicidal with a plan, with the intent. And I don't know why I didn't just go ahead and follow through with that. But thankfully, I think there probably was one tiny little spark, which I now know was God, that was alive in me that kept me alive despite my best intentions to kill myself. So I did get 12 stepped into another program. And then imagine this, I didn't get much recovery in that other program because I was still abusing and using the food. So I got into OA in early 1995. So I did steps to the best of my ability, and I did have about 10 years of abstinence. God restored my relationship with my kids, which was an absolute miracle because they were absolutely terrified of me. Because I was so abusive. I got an undergrad degree. I started a career. And, you know, life was going fairly well. I do have relapse in my story. Here's what I know about my disease. I know that my disease is, cunning, baffling, powerful, always looking for another way to get in the back door. Unfortunately, it finally did find a deceptive way back in, I'm going to tell you real quickly what I learned from my relapses. Here's the bottom line from my two relapses. First of all, doesn't matter how spiritually fit I think I am, the phenomenon of craving is real. If I am eating my alcoholic food and playing games with those foods, it really doesn't matter what else I'm doing. I could think that I'm working a great program. I feel, you know, close to God subjectively, but that phenomenon of craving is a real thing. And I don't think I believed in that. I'm a believer now. The other thing I learned is, yep, I am as sick as everybody else, and I do have to surrender to some discipline, or I'm going to relapse. Because I used to think, you know, a few years ago, well, hey, you know, I'm bad. It's obvious I'm bad, but I'm not that bad. I don't really need that kind of structure. Yep, I need that kind of structure. So I finally made it back in January of 2024. And I made it back in. I had been listening on the fringes for quite some time to Vision. And I got back in. I worked this program quickly. I went through the big book quickly with a sponsor, a recovered sponsor. And that right there has been the game changer for me in my program. Big book is it for me. That may not be true for everyone, but to the point my disease has progressed now, it is definitely the answer for me. So here's what I want to do. That was kind of what it was like. Let me tell you what it's like right now. Right now, God's restored my relationship with my kids to the point where, I'm really good friends with both of them. My sons are 39 and 34. I have grandkids. My sons call me. One of them calls me at least two or three times a week. The other one calls me at least once a week just to chat and catch up. And I am super grateful for that because that was a devastating thing. Because my kids were really, really abused. And that's only God, nothing that I did. But God turned that around and connected us. Another exciting thing that I did is I got my master's degree in 2013. And at age 55, I'm 67 now, so at age 55, I changed profession. And that, let me tell you, is a scary kind of anxiety-provoking place to be. But truthfully, it's turned out to be the best thing I ever did. Right now, working a good program, have regular contact with my sponsor, going to meetings, loving our big book, and, you know, sponsoring and all of the things that we do. And also, especially, paying close attention to 10, 11, and 12, and we're going to talk about that later because that's been a key thing that God's used to help me in my journey out of anxiety and fear. So let me just kind of tell you where things are. Well, I wouldn't say now. I would say in the past several years. Here's the state of my anxiety. Right now, my anxiety is under really, really good control, but that is only by the grace of God. Even after coming into the program, I have had a lot of anxiety. Now, here's what I want to say. I don't currently, but I have had. Here's what I want to say. I want to say, first of all, the program has done more to improve my anxiety, to decrease my symptoms, and to help me feel at ease than anything else I've ever done, bar none. So, you know, that for me has been the game changer. I saw a major decrease in my fear and anxiety when I first started working with death. So that has done a ton for me. If you're out there and you're struggling with a lot of fear and anxiety, for me, it's not the only thing, but it's one of the best things. It's one of the things that's made the most impact. The other thing is, I will say I've had a lot of good outside help. Those mental health professionals have given me tools, strategies, and they have really, really helped me a lot. But up until, I would say, 2017, which is kind of the point of a new chapter in my life, I probably was still struggling some with some anxiety. And here's what I noticed. What I noticed is I was still using avoidance a lot. And if you have fear and anxiety, the natural thing to want to do is to avoid, to get away from whatever it is that's making you anxious. And so I still used that a lot. But here's the problem with that. Avoidance is not freedom. Okay? I wasn't free to do what I wanted to do or to be who I wanted to be because I was still worshiping at the idol of fear. And I'm going to tell you, fear set itself up in my life. Fear and anxiety and dis-ease and, you know, just being uncomfortable. That was what, to me, was like a false god that I sacrificed my life to. And I put everything I could think of on that altar to try to get that to go away, to try to make a deal with my anxiety. And you know what? It just didn't work. So like I said, up until 2017, despite being in recovery for some of that time, I just didn't feel like I had a lot of freedom. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to switch over to our big book because our big book is such a rich resource. When I was looking at our big book, to kind of get some thoughts together for this presentation. Wow, if you Google, you know, how many times the word fear is used in our book and in other AA literature, it's a lot. And I think that Bill W. instinctively knew that, you know, this is a thing for us. And so what I'm going to talk some about today, or mostly about, is found on the very bottom of 67 and throughout most of 68. And let me just pull out some of those passages that talk about fear. This is in the chapter How It Works. And so he's talking about fear, and he talks about this short word somehow touches about every aspect of our lives. What a profound statement. It was an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. And, you know, to me, that pretty well sums up my existence. I think I was so anxious. A lot of times, it just felt normal to me. I didn't even really know or wasn't very conscious of it. And then he goes on to say, it set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve, but did not we ourselves set the ball rolling? And yes, I did set the ball rolling. In our AA 12 and 12, he says, the chief activator of our defect has been our self-centered fear. And I don't know if I agree with that 100%, but there's a lot of me that agrees with that. And that pretty well simplifies things for me, because a lot of times fear is what sets the ball rolling for me when it comes to the way I react to life. And what I know about me is when I become anxious about something, even if I don't have any awareness of it, down in my subconscious, I react out of that self-centered fear, and then other people react to my reaction. And that does set the ball rolling. The other thing I do is I make crazy decisions out of places of fear. I make decisions that later turn out to not be great decisions simply because I was afraid at the time. And so that activated selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, self-seeking, all of those things that we talk about in our inventory. And I, you know, take self-seeking action, and I'm dishonest and I'm selfish because I'm worried that I'm going to lose something that I think I need or not get something that I demand. And, that is not a basis to live a life on. That's not freedom. The other line that I relate to so much in this is sometimes we think fear ought to be classed with stealing. Oh my gosh, I can't even tell you the things that fear has stolen from me, my fear and anxiety. It's stolen the ability to be present. Okay, that's why I ate, because I just couldn't be present. It stole my freedom to respond in a kind of, because when I'm fearful, I'm lashing out. I'm in fight or flight, and I'm terrified, and I'm, you know, in those places, I lose control of myself. It stole my peace. I could never be at ease. I was always worried about the next thing that might happen, you know, always worried about what was coming, you know, coming down the road. And the other thing that it did is it stole my dreams. You know, because there were things that I wanted to do, trips that I wanted to take, things I wanted to see, experiences that I want to have, but I couldn't do it because I was in anxiety, in constant anxiety. So here's what I want to do real quick. I'm going to share with you a chapter in my life that God started back in 2017. And then I'm going to pull this back around and talk about our big book and the steps that I've used that have been just invaluable to me. So in 2017, God started me on this journey. Now, I did not know at the time what was happening. All I knew is that in 2017, there was a total solar eclipse. And I am an astronomy junkie. I mean, I am into celestial stuff. I'm obsessed with eclipses and tornadoes and all different kinds of weird, you know, kind of sky things like that, weather and everything. And I literally had looked forward to this thing for 30 years. 30 years. I drug my kids out when they were little tiny to see a partial eclipse. And, that was back in the days before internet, but I had read somewhere that in 2017 there was going to be a total solar eclipse. Now, if you're an eclipsophile, you know how hard it is to see one. I mean, these are very rare. If you're not an eclipsophile, just trust me, it's kind of exacting. It has to do with cloud covering. You've got to be in a certain path, and it's only about 50 miles wide. Everything, I had made plans, everything just was awful. And the only place I was guaranteed to see it was western Nebraska and farther north and west from there. So willy-nilly, I don't have a hotel room or anything. I jump in my car and start driving, and I am terrified, okay? I have no idea where I'm going. I have no idea if I'm even going to see it. And I drive, I want to say it was 800 miles, and that's a one-way trip. So I got to see it. It was on the scale of awe. If seeing God is a 10, it was a 9.75. I mean, it was an absolute seminal moment in my life. And I drove home, and I thought, okay, well, that was cool. And then I heard God say to me, you know what? That's just the beginning. We are done with fear. We are not doing this anymore. Come on, we're going on some adventures. And so in 2018, on the way to Los Angeles to the birthday party, he cured me of a 40-year flying phobia. I'm not going to go into the protocol that I use because that's outside issues. If you want to call me later, I'll talk to you about it. But he literally cured me of a 40-year flying phobia. So apropos that I was on the way to the birthday party. 40 years, I had not flown or traveled because I was so terrified of flying. The next year, he cured me of my fear of heights. And the year after that, he said, okay, what's next? And I started to think, well, I've always wanted to go to the Grand Canyon, but I don't want to just look over the edge. I want to go down in there and I want to see what it's like inside the canyon. So in 2020, I booked myself an 8-day rafting trip, and I went with an outfitter. I'm not crazy enough to think that I can handle class 10 rapids by myself. I did go with an outfitter, and it was a fabulous trip right up until day 4, when we had let me set the stage. So all of the class 10 rapids, except for one, you do on day 4. So we got up on day 4. We were all very excited. It was awesome. We were going to do this, and we did it, and it was great fun. And we're having a fabulous time. Lots of people on the boat. You go with a big group of people. And we were doing great until we got into one of the hairiest class 10s on the river system. And at that point in time, we dropped into the rapid. You drop down into a big hole. And unbeknownst to us, we lost motor power. So now we're going through a class 10 rapid with no motor. Now, these things are like a barge, so they're pretty huge. So no big deal, except that we collided. Our boat collided off on the left side with a set of boulders that was off of there. And I was the only person on that boat that was hurt. But I had a horrible, horrible crush injury to my right lower leg. Basically, everything was broken from the knee down, except my foot. My foot survived, but it was really, really awful and terrifying. So needless to say, I got a free medevac out of the canyon after another 3 hours of having to run rapid because we weren't due to find a beach so that the helicopter could land. So it was pretty crazy. And I came home. I flew home from Flagstaff, and after being in the hospital to get my pain under control and everything, I flew home. I had surgery. And the day after I got home from having the surgery, the rafting company called me and they said, look, we want to check on you. Number one, just make sure you're okay. But number two, we want to find out if you would ever do this again, because the time of the year that you like to go, we only have one more seat on that boat. And I heard God say yes. And so I said yes. And I had 5 months of rehab with PT. Then I hired a trainer at the gym, and the next year, exactly to the day almost, it was one day difference, I went back and I did that whole 8-day trip again. And here is the cool thing. When we got through that rapid and we were all screaming and yelling and just whooping and cheering, we pulled over to watch our other boat come through. And then we celebrated in the very place that we had splinted my leg up the year before. So I'm telling you what, that was all God and that was none of me. And so truthfully, I mean, it's been really, really, that right there was a fear buster for me. So here's what I want to tell you about, though. I want to tell you about anxiety and fear and how important steps 10, 11, and 12 have become for me. Because these steps, have been invaluable in this journey where I'm trying to cooperate with God. So here's the thing that I have come to find out for myself. And again, this is just me. This may not apply to you. This step 10, I do follow the directions in the big book. Those directions have been really, really helpful for me. But what I found out after doing step 10s for a while is, you know, all of a sudden it occurred to me, you know, the objective here is not to make me feel better for my own sake. That's not the reason I ask God to remove my fear in the 10th step. It's not for me. Wanting to feel better in the moment, I recognize that for me is addict behavior. Okay, that simply means that I've replaced food with something else to make me feel better. So the objective for me of a 10th step is not to make me feel better for my own sake. Okay, it's to lessen or remove my fear so that I can hear God clearly in step 11. And then once that fear has been lessened or removed, and I've talked about my selfishness, dishonesty, and resentment as well, and I've followed those directions, and I've made amends if need be, and I've turned my thoughts towards someone I can help, talking to someone else about it, then I am in a place where I can pray and meditate and hear God's will for me. And then step 12 tells me that now I need to go and live out God's will for me for his glory, right? To bring him glory. That's what our third step prayer says. It says, you know, take away our difficulties that victory over them might bear witness to those we would help of your power, your love, and your way of life. So I'm not doing this stuff for myself, that I'm doing it because it's God's will for me. And then the fallout from that, or the benefit, is that I have a message to carry. And so that was, that's just kind of been a thing for me as far as my growth in steps 10, 11, and 12. I no longer see them as relief for me. Although I will tell you that most of the time when I finish a 10th step, I feel 100% better. But again, that's not the objective, to make me feel better. It's to get my self-centered fear out of the way so that I can hear what God wants me to do. And I want to tell you, on that second Grand Canyon trip, I could not have done that trip if I had not had 10, 11, and 12. Because after you've had an accident, I'm here to tell you, people, your friends and family, and people who know you either are afraid for you or they think you are just crazy. But I have never been more certain that that second trip was God's will for me. And what helped me to stay centered in that, because there were a lot of times I thought to myself, you are crazy. Okay, you're just crazy to be doing this again. I knew that I knew that I knew me to get there were steps 10, 11, and 12. So for me, that's just been a nice little, it's like a flowing from 10 into 11 and then 11 into 12. And so it's been a nice flow for me to pick those steps up and to really, really use them. So here's what I want to tell you about present day. God hasn't let up. He continues to call me into adventures. Now, again, some of these adventures might not be adventures to you, but they are way out of my comfort zone. You have to remember that, back in my 30s, I was agoraphobic. I could barely leave my house. And here I am now doing crazy stuff like, hiking the Narrows at Zion and camping outdoors, and the latest thing has been backpacking. So he continues to call me into these crazy things. And so one of the things I just recently did, he called me to go on my first solo backpacking trip. So you're talking about a little 67-year-old woman out in the woods all by herself. Now, again, for those of you that are, outdoors people, that might not sound like a big deal, but to me, that was a big deal. I can tell you what I have come to find out. about anxiety and fear. All of these experiences since 2017 have taught me that fear is a liar, okay? It is a liar. It lies to me constantly, and it is a tyrant. It is constantly telling me to turn around and avoid things. And I tell you what I found out. I found out that when I'm in God's will and I can move forward into the fear and fully embrace it, that I come out the other side of that and I am less afraid. So I want to tell you real quickly back to the Grand Canyon, my experience the second time going through that rapid. I tell you what, I have never been, well, I won't say never. There are a couple of other times in my life I've been that terrified. But I tell you, I thought I might die from the fear. But you know what I found out? I didn't die from the fear. That is fear lying to me. And when I got through that rapid and out the other side, I had this thought, is that it? Is that all? That's what I've been avoiding my whole life? Well, yeah, that wasn't fun, okay? I mean, I wouldn't want to do that every day, but I didn't die from it. And I survived it. And I'm going to tell you, in that moment for me, fear, the spell that fear had over me was broken. It was just broken. It was gone. And so now, I mean, I don't love feeling fear, but I'm not afraid of it anymore. You know, it tells me all kinds of scary stories about what might happen to me. And I've already lived one of those scary stories. I've lived that out. But what I have found is that if I am willing, first of all, I have to know that it's God's will for me. And he usually gives me the next leading of what kind of adventure he wants to take me on. We just did one a couple of weeks ago, the backpacking thing. And in the middle of May, he's calling me to another one. And it won't be fear-filled. It'll just be uneasy parts of the time. But if I know that it's his will for me, what I have found is that I can venture out. I do prepare. I don't do stupid things that are unnecessarily dangerous. I know my own level of skill and, tolerance for that kind of stuff. And I listen. I'm good at listening to God. But he does continue to call me out. And what I found out is if I'm willing to go, if I'm willing to do 10, 11, and 12, and I'm willing to carry this forward and live that out, that God will eventually remove that fear. And if he doesn't remove it, he'll lessen it to the point where I'm okay. And what I have found is the more I go and do things, the less fear I have. So it's been a really good thing for me. So I'm gonna just wind up here. I want to tell you about this little talk that God and I had on my way to my first solo backpacking trip, because it was a little scary. I mean, for those of you that don't backpack, you're basically carrying everything you need on your back. And including your food, your water, your tent, and all of that kind of stuff. And, you know, you're going out places where, it's wild out there, you know. So anyway, here I am, a little 67-year-old woman tramping around in the woods, and I'm whining to God about this being hard and me just feeling kind of anxious. You know, I wasn't terrified or anything like that, but I was a little uneasy. And I'm whining to him about, this is hard. And, you know, when the sun goes down and it's just me, you know, blah, blah, blah. I said, you know, this is really anxious. I'm uneasy. Hard. He said, you know what else is hard? Dying slowly in your comfort zone without ever living. That's what's hard. And I laughed and laughed. You know, God, he is the king of the pithy one-liners. I find that he's always got a comeback for me, and he has such a great sense of humor. And you know what? I survived, and it was great, and I'm ready for the next one. So I'll tell you what, Larry, with that, I'm just going to say thank you so much for allowing me to tell God's story. I love it. it because it's not about me, it's about him. He has incredibly awesome power to pull us out of places if we're simply willing. And heck, I don't even know. Sometimes I don't even know that I was willing. So anyway, but with that, I'm going to just say thanks, and I'm gonna pass for now.
Thanks so much, Renee. Thank you for your inspiring presentation. Your insights truly resonated with me, and I'm sure many others. So we appreciate your generosity this morning. And we're going to transition to a question and answer period. Before we do, let me give you the share ID for this morning's presentation. If you want to go back and listen to Renee's presentation, that number is 22,381. That's 22381. And also, just a reminder, please stick around with us after the Q&A session, after we close up, because we will ask Renee for her contact information if you care to reach out to her individually. So with that in mind, let's transition to a Q&A. If you have a question for Renee, please press star 1 to unmute your phone and give me your first name and last initial. Who has a question for Renee this morning?
Elizabeth.
Janet P.M. Mm-hmm.
Elizabeth and Janet. Who else?
Alicia. Yep.
I think I heard Alisa. Did I get that right?
In Minnesota, yes.
Alisa. Okay, Elizabeth, Janet, Alisa. Who did I miss? And again, if you want to unmute, it's star 1. Questions for Renee this morning.
Teresa P. in Massachusetts.
Was that Teresa? Okay. So we've got Elizabeth, Janet, Alisa, and Teresa. Anybody else? This first round, we should have time. Okay, let's go with this first round. So we have Elizabeth, followed by Janet, Alisa, and Teresa. Elizabeth, what question do you have for Renee this morning? Good morning to you.
Good morning, Larry. Thank you for your service. And good morning, Renee. What a wonderful share. I so related to your story. And fear has been my constant companion all through my life, and I've been binging from a very young age as well. By the grace of God, I'm recovered today. My question, and if you think this is an outside issue, I totally understand, and we can do this offline, but I'm coincidentally going to be going on a backpacking trip in September with my husband, who's been doing backpacking for many, many years with his friends. By the way, I'm 67 too, and I've never done it. And I eat a very pretty structured food plan, and I'd just be curious to know, in general, what your food disciplines are, if you're comfortable sharing, whatever you're comfortable sharing, and how you may have adjusted it for these adventures that God calls you to. Very inspiring, and I'll leave it open.
Thanks for that question. And, you know, that's kind of, that has been a issue that has been on my mind as I, you know, go forward, for sure. So what I will do is stay out of the particulars, obviously, but just say that, number one, just to be honest, some of those things earlier, I was not abstinent, and so, you know, didn't pay much attention to my food plan. For some of the later things that I have been on, yes, I do have a structure. And so what I have done is I have definitely followed my food plan. Okay, so I'm not going to let go of that. sometimes because of the level of physical activity. You know, I have cleared that with whoever was my sponsor so that I could add a bit optionally if I needed to. And then the other thing is, on some of those things, I have taken, like if food was provided on those trips, then I would take some backup stuff that I could have and then just turn the rest over to God and ask Him to please provide what was needed for me. And generally speaking, that happened. Now, if you're going to do backpacking, you know that there are some serious restrictions. So I think that, you know, because everything's got to be shelf stable or dried. And so I think always my program comes first, my abstinence comes first. And then if you want to get into more particulars, why don't we do that offline? And maybe I can share with you some of the things that have been helpful to me in that particular situation.
Thanks for the question, Elizabeth. Yeah, we'll get her contact information. You can reach out to her. Okay, I don't know where I got Janet, because I certainly know Janice's voice. Been around for a little bit. Janice.
Thank you. I hope God's going to let me hang around a little bit more, because I know God today has sent you, Renee, to talk, and I know it because I feel it, you know. And I have to say that, you know, being just diagnosed with some more cancer and 30% less functioning of my kidney, you have just given, God has come through you to me. And I do have a question. When you said, you know, it's uneasy, you know, the anxiety at this time, you know what's hard. Living, what was your comment at the end? What's harder?
Hey, Janice, I'm so glad to hear your voice this morning.
Thank you.
Yeah, and actually, so funny. It's not my line, it was God's line, because I was in the middle of all this just cranking and whining and, you know, and usually, so when I know it's God's voice, when He busts in on that and interrupts that and says something that I am totally not thinking of, excuse me. And He,
God bless.
Yeah, He busted in on me and told me, yeah, I know this is hard. You know what else is hard? Dying slowly in your comfort zone without ever living.
Dying slowly in my comfort zone. Yeah, that's God, in my comfort zone. And what was the last one? See, I'm getting old. You think you're old. Comfort zone.
Without ever living.
Ah, that's it. Well, thank you so much, because you're one of the angels He sent. Thanks, Renee.
Thanks, Janice. Okay, so we have Elisa next up, if I got that right, followed by Teresa. Elisa, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for your service, and thank you, Renee. Thank you, Larry. Thank you, Renee, for bringing this message to us. Thank you, God. So grateful. I've just returned back to Vision for You, and I have been so struggling with fear lately. I have 2 days of abstinence. I skipped out and went to other formats and have not had long-term abstinence, but my sponsor and I are working through the steps now, my sponsor and Vision, and I'm so grateful. But what I want to ask you is, I want to say that I'm going through a change of living type of experience in my life right now. I'm returning back to my first husband, and we're recommitting. And I've been so riddled with fear, and I wanted to ask you, was it your first round of working the steps that you had this transformation once you had the food where you were surrendered to giving up your alcoholic foods, or because you said you had relapsed. So I don't know if I'm making myself clear, but I guess my disease wants me to get well right away, but I know that it's a process. But if you could just elaborate on that a little bit. And I've been under the spell of fear for years. I so relate to what you said, and thank you.
So, Elisa, would you mind, just go ahead and clarify your question, just so I make sure that I'm answering it.
Okay, so you said that you had had relapse before. So when you, you said this whole change took place in 2017, and I believe that's when you came into program. So anyway, I'm just wondering, was it your first round of working the steps that where you had this transformation?
Oh, no, not at all. I've been in the program for 30 years and in and out for 30 years. And just full transparency, here's the thing. After my first 10 years of abstinence, when I relapsed, now I'm not going to say that I was great and things were wonderful, okay? But having had 10 plus years in the program and a strong spiritual connection, well, up until the point that I started to rest on my laurels, basically, up until then, I was abstinent. But even in relapse, I don't pull away from my tradition, my spiritual tradition, the steps. I don't know. They just seem to me like they are interwoven in the very fiber of my being. So again, I'm not rationalizing a relapse because I'm definitely not in good spiritual condition during a relapse, and my food was wonky and all over the place. So it's not a great place to be. So in 2017, when God started this whole adventure thing with me, I was in relapse at that point in time, but I have never gone without the ability to hear God. I'm so sorry. It's so kind of nebulous and out there. No, this was not my first round of the steps. I mean, gosh, I've worked these steps off and on for 30 years. So, it's taken a while. And that's the thing. God, in my experience with me, God has peeled back the layers, very carefully and one at a time. And it's a slow, gradual process. So my encouragement to you from my own experience, strength, and hope would be to, recover, and to, to pay really close attention to your program. That needs to come first. Everything else comes after that. My own experience has shown me that I've really got to have a close relationship with God, work in these steps, and that is the number one priority. So, no, it did not come immediately. I'll pass.
Okay, thanks for the question, Elisa. And before we go to Teresa with a question, we have some time. So if we're talking about fear from the Big Book perspective, if you have some questions surrounding that, certainly think about that, because we're going to see if there's more folks have questions for Renee. So with that in mind, Teresa's up next. Good morning, Teresa.
Good morning. This is Teresa P. from Massachusetts. Thank you, Renee, for your share. Much of what you said resonated with me. And you talked about steps 10, 11, and 12. And you said your attempts made you feel better. but that was not the purpose. They led you into 11 and 12, where you could be of service in step 12. And I was wondering if you could just briefly summarize what you said again. Thank you so much.
Sure. Thanks, Tarifa, for the question. Well, I have done, you know, step 10, 11, and 12 ever since I came into vision. And gosh, I don't even remember when that was. I want to say back somewhere around 2018. Anyway, you know, those three steps have totally and completely revolutionized my spiritual life, my daily walk, and just generally how I live. So to summarize, what I think occurred to me recently, and this was just from some work that my sponsor and I are doing, and with some outside literature, which is, it's big book related, of course, that we had started to read through some extended works on step 10, and I think I've known this for a while, it kind of at a couple of layers deep, but it finally got, I finally got clear on the purpose of step 10 for me. Now, again, this is just the way I work it. This is what's worked for me. So, not trying to get anybody else to, you know, do it my way. This is just for me. Finally, what I figured is the purpose of step 10 for me is so that I can have my fear lessened or removed, but not for my own comfort, but to remove that self-centered fear so that my brain is clear enough to be able to hear God in step 11. Me, what his will for me is, and then trust him for the power to carry that out. So I think I changed my thinking about what the objective was. And so the objective is not so much self-centered anymore about making me comfortable, but more about calming my crazy brain down so that I can hear what God says to me and I can be neutral going into my prayer with him. Because, see, the problem is if I have a fear, then I have an agenda. I want to avoid something or get something. And, that clouds up my step 11. I can't really hear God if my own agenda is screaming. So what that 10th step has done is quiet down my own agenda so that I can hear God plainly. And then once I hear him and trust him for the power to live out his will for me, then I carry that in, you know, live those principles in all my affairs and then carry any message that comes from that. So that would be my summary.
Question. Okay, another great opportunity for more questions. If you're out there, press star 1. Give me your first name and last initial. Who has a question for Renee?
Heidi C.
Hi, this is Catherine K.
Elena C.
K. Florida.
Okay, let me tell you who I've heard.
Hanayeta.
Was it Hanayeta? Okay, get you on the end there. Yeah, let me tell you who I've heard so far. Heidi, Catherine, Elena, Karen, and Hanayeta. Anybody else?
Paula J.
Paula?
J.
Hi, Paula. Okay.
Hi.
A good group. Let's
Sharon K. Florida.
Okay. We'll end with Sharon there and see where we're at in the time we have left. So we have in this particular order Heidi, Catherine, Elena, Karen, Hanayeta, Paula, and Sharon. Let's start off with a question from Heidi. Good morning, Heidi.
Good morning. Renee, thank you so much for your talk today. You really helped name my own experience with agoraphobia, avoidant personality, and anxiety disorder. I'm 2 months into getting into OA, and I'm about to go into step 4, but have started to slip and I'm struggling to stay abstinent. So I don't even know if I should move ahead to step four, if I haven't in fact mastered the abstinence piece. So I'm wondering what it was like for you to go through steps 1 through 3.
Thanks, Heidi, for that question. Well, okay, so then my brain goes to, all right, which time? Because, and I truthfully, honestly, a lot of times those steps I do on a daily moment, you know, moment by moment basis, because, you know, I'm powerless. My life can get unmanageable. But I do have a long track record now with a God who can restore me to sanity. And can, you know, I have committed to turn my life and my will over to him. You know, as far as all of the particulars, I would say that that's probably, you know, a question for your sponsor. My experience with 1, 2, and 3, it, again, it just depends on the time. I remember my first third step experience like it was yesterday. It was a profound change. Now, I know that often people have more of the educational variety of change, and I've had a lot of educational variety, type spiritual awakening, or, you know, those kinds of things. So some of mine have been slow, but the first third step that I took was incredible. That was back in 1995, probably 95 or 96. Well, I mean, obviously, I was completely powerless. I showed up in the program literally wanting to kill myself because binge eating, it just makes me want to die. I mean, it just makes me want to die. So for me, there has never been a question about the life or death nature of my disease. I will either eat myself to death slowly, or I will put a gun to my head and do it quickly. And those are, you know, that's what happens to me when I'm eating. I got in here and I had no relationship with God. I was angry at him and said I didn't believe in him, but obviously I did if I was angry at him. And I was determined to work this program somehow, some way, you know, while cutting him out, but I couldn't do it. And so what happened was I kept running up against the same trouble over and over again, and I don't even need to go into the particulars of that. I could not get over it. I couldn't get over the hump. And finally, I was just like, okay, well, you know, you all high and mighty up there, I'll tell you what, I'll give you this. And if you do a good job with this, then maybe, possibly, I might turn some other areas of my life over to you. I mean, how is that for ego, arrogance, pride? I mean, it's just laughable to me now. But I'm going to tell you something. He, in that moment, upended my life. And I had one of those weird experiences like Bill W. where I had to call my sponsor and say, I think I'm losing it. And she was like, what do you mean? I said, I think I'm going crazy. And she said, well, how do you feel? And I said, I don't know. Like everything is going just exactly like it's supposed to be in this moment. And I feel, I don't know. And she said, well, honey, that's peace, serenity. How long has it been since you felt that? And I said, I don't know that I've ever felt that. So that was my first one. But, you know, from there, I think things got more garden variety. And so, you know, it's hard for me to answer that question because that those steps, those first 1, 2, and 3 have been, they have unfolded in various ways throughout my life. They've been a thing that, you know, is growing and changing as I come to know God better in my daily walk with him. So I'm sorry for the you know, the general theme there, but that's the best I can come up with.
Thanks, Heidi, for that question. Next up, we have Catherine, followed by Elena. Catherine, good morning to you. Catherine, press star one.
Hi, Catherine from Vermont. Thanks so much for your service, both of you. Such wonderful leadership and such a great, powerful story. So inspiring and deep. So I really appreciate hearing your ESH, but also just your real submission to the program. And I hear you, it took a long time, but I just really appreciate it. And my question is, you know, I have a 7-year-old son, and I've been in relapse since he was one. And so, I've been abusive to him. And I was just wondering if you could talk a little bit more about that part, because I think, you know, that's the part that really has brought me back into program, is like the horror of that. And I just wonder about, like, how you survived that in a way. And how, you know, I'm so glad to hear your kids are with you, and you have you have relationships with them. And I was just curious more about that part of your journey. Thanks so much. I'll mute.
Oh, Catherine. Yeah. Thank you for asking about that. And, you know, I try to always share that because there are so many moms out there who have raised children in their disease, you know, who have to find a way to deal with the guilt and the sadness and the remorse that comes from that. And so let me just tell you, oh my gosh, oh, it was bad. So, you know, my abuse of my kids, my older son took the brunt of it, and the younger one was a witness to it. And I did not get into the program until they were 9 and 5. So they lived in my disease up until that time. And we're talking, you know, everything from neglect all the way up to, you know, screaming, emotional abuse, physical abuse. It was really an awful, awful thing. And so I want you to know you're not alone. In fact, you know, I'm sure if we took a poll here on the line of moms, there are probably some stories. So here's what happened. What happened was, once I got into recovery, it became very apparent that this was not a good thing. And I was abstinent already, and this was still happening. So once again, you know, abstinence and working the steps are good. They're the entry fee into recovery, as far as I'm concerned. However, you know, the rest of our stuff is a slow, gradual process. And so what happened was, I ended up with a hard as nails sponsor in another program, by the way, not in OA. And she yanked my reins up short, and she just said, "Look, I respect your right to abuse your kids. If you're going to abuse them, you're going to abuse them. But you know what? I can't sponsor you anymore. And let me tell you why. Because my kids are in their 20s now, and they will have nothing to do with me, because I was so abusive to them. They don't trust me, and they made themselves scarce. And I'm not going to live that out vicariously through you right now. You still have a chance. God can restore your relationship with your kids, but you are going to need to do something different." And so we came up with a plan, with an action plan, and she had me report into her. And I'll tell you what, it got better pretty quickly after that. So having somebody for accountability, a good sponsor who is all about these steps, and, you know, all about this program, and is not afraid to call you out on your BS whenever you are screwing things up. And so that is what it took for me. And then later I got some outside help. And if you want to know more about that, you can contact me later, because we did a few things, which I'm not going to go into here, which really sealed the deal for me, helped me to understand what was going on with me and how to stop. So I have a heart full of compassion for you, and I'm so glad that you're back in. And with that, I'm going to pass. Thanks.
Thanks, Karen. Okay, next up we have Elena, followed by, I think I might have heard Sharon. Little Bunny told me that, as opposed to Karen, but I could be wrong. So let's go with Elena. Good morning, Elena.
Good morning, Larry. Good morning, Renee. Thank you so much for your share and your story. I heard that action helped you overcome anxiety and or help anxiety, but also I heard you're using step 10 to overcome that. And could you say more about how you use 10 step to overcome your clinical anxiety?
Well, I think, Elena, yeah, and thanks for the question. So I think that if you want to talk about overcoming clinical anxiety, then that right there, I need to clarify, has been through various means, okay? It has definitely involved the working of the steps, and for me, getting a closer, more intimate relationship with my higher power did wonders for my clinical anxiety. And the other thing that's been very helpful for me has been outside help. I was gravely affected by my disease, but the Big Book promises us that, you know, that even people who are gravely affected can get well, and that's been my story. So there's that. What I am going to say is that, and I guess I mean to separate out clinical anxiety from just the normal anxiety that I experience in daily life. I mean, a lot of us experience that. It might not be fear. It might just be a feeling of uneasiness or restlessness or the need to move or worry constantly, okay? So one thing I would say is to make a clear distinction, because I think some people hear the word fear and they go, well, I'm not afraid, okay? Well, that might be fine. Fear might be too strong a word for you. What I would say is when you're doing those little 11 steps throughout the day, you know, how many times are you agitated, annoyed, uneasy, stressed, worried, and so forth. Okay. Those things would be what I would say that, my 10th step has been really, really, really helpful with. So, I do pause throughout the day and, you know, anytime I'm agitated or doubtful. Now I'm going to be honest with you and just real. Sometimes I don't catch that right away. But after a while, I've gotten really good at noticing what stress or restlessness or whatever feels like in my body, and I'll notice that, and I'll go, oh, yeah, I'm really feeling kind of keyed up and on edge right now. So that is a really good time for me to do a 10th step, and I do it exactly like the book says. You know, I watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When those crop up, I notice that. I call someone if I'm able to and discuss it. And sometimes I cannot, in which case I mentally go through it, just me and God, and I save it for later. And I do an inventory, a quick inventory. What's worrying me? What is it? Why is it that I'm upset or feeling uneasy? And then where am I selfish, dishonest, resentment, fear? And then I just ask God to remove that and ask him, you know, what he would have me do. Do I owe amends? Usually not. And who can I impact right now in a positive way? How can I, you know, turn my attention to someone that I can help? So, again, I think it's my 10th step has been really helpful for everything, but especially for the nagging stuff that just happens during the day, you know, that uneasiness or being annoyed to me can be the top layer, and underneath that top layer can be, oh, I'm annoyed because I'm afraid. I'm afraid that this person is going to do this or expect this of me or whatever. So, again, I think that, you know, my 10th step's been helpful for everything, but especially for the daily stuff. I'll pass.
Thanks, Elena. I'm not sure that we'll get through everybody here in the interest of time, but I think, was it Karen? Did I hear that right? Or Sharon?
Sharon.
Okay, great. Thanks, Sharon. Good morning to you.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for this meeting and wonderful share. Could you please maybe just review how you would surrender shame and guilt and around fears, because a lot of my fears are around shame and self-worth, and I don't know if that's something that you brought to God in terms of healing. Thanks.
Shame and self-worth, and that being tied in with fear. Gosh, I really don't have anything that pops off the top of my head right now. I think that, again, I think our program is probably the place that I would steer you. And if you find that you are in need of, you know, some outside help, if you find that you're in need of some outside help, and, you know, you're being gravely impacted by those things, I think that I would encourage you to pull that on board as well. You know, our big book talks about the different resources and how we shouldn't, we shouldn't omit those things. We should be open to those kinds of things. But I am really sorry. Nothing pops to mind with me right on that topic. So I honestly don't feel qualified to talk about that. I'm going to pass, Larry.
Okay. Thanks so much, Karen. Okay, Hanayeta, your turn. Good morning.
Okay, Larry Kay. Thank you so much. And I'm just going to say thank you to both of you. And Renee, I'll probably call you and I'll give it to somebody else to ask the question. Thank you again.
Okay. Thanks, Hanayeta. Yeah, we'll get Renee's contact information, but we can try to get to Paula here. Paula, good morning to you.
Good morning, Larry. Good morning, Renee. Thank you so much for your service. My question is about hearing God's voice, and could you be a little more specific about how you hear God's voice and what the first time was that you heard his voice?
Yeah, Paula, thanks for that question. Well, okay, so here's what I have discovered by talking to my other friends that are on a spiritual path. You know, people hear God in very, very different ways. So when you ask that, I'm going to share my own experience with that. There are so, so many different ways that people hear from God. To quickly answer your first question, wow, I don't even know. I can't even remember the first time. I'm sure it was probably somewhere. I heard him generally around that first kind of lightning bolt spiritual experience that I had. And when I say heard, not audibly, but, I do believe that whatever you want to call it, my gut, my intuition, the spirit, whatever was speaking to me back then. How I hear him? Well, sometimes if I've started on a roll, like I described on this backpacking trip where I'm whining, a lot of times he will break in mid-whine from me and just insert some thought that isn't my thought. I mean, it wasn't the direction that I was going. That happens, I would say, rarely. Often I hear from him during my quiet time in the morning, and it could be as simple as, our big book telling us that we look at the 24 hours ahead, and we, you know, we before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, and, you know, he talks to me about what he wants me to do that day. Okay, so it could be something that simple. But again, I don't know that he talks. I think that he brings things up for me mentally. Another thing, another way that God communicates with me, he puts desires in my heart. And they don't come and go. They are nagging constantly until I do them. So the Grand Canyon trip was a desire that God put that there. And in that way, he spoke to me. And also, this trip that I have coming up was not my idea. The location, nothing about it was my idea. God put that desire in my heart, and there it is. So that's another way. Sometimes I get guidance, just intuition or impression. I don't know. This is what I'm feeling like God wants me to do. God, if you don't want me to do this, walk my way. Otherwise, this is the way I'm going to go because it feels like the way you're leading me. And so, a variety of ways. So I hope that answers.
Yeah, thanks so much for the question there, Paula. And boy, the time has flown by. So we're ready to wrap this up here. And Renee, thank you so much. Very inspiring and a real diamond for our archives here. So thank you again. Much appreciated. And I'm going to give the share ID as we close here again for the presentation this morning. If you want to go back and listen to Renee or share this with others, that number, 22,381. That's 22381. So we are now going to close with a reading from the big book in our namesake here, chapter entitled A Vision for You on page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy death. May God bless you and keep you until